Unpublished. My name is Amy.
I'm James.
And today we're going to discuss authors that resonate with us, why we like their voices, why we like their work.
Am I in any way in shot on the camera?
Yeah, you're in shot.
Oh, really? I can't see myself because I'm blocked by the lens.
Yeah, you're in shot.
Okay, first of all, before we start, rant time about the English. Because I feel like it's a new segment in the podcast since we moved here. And I have to get it off my chest.
What's wrong?
Can you guess what it's going to be?
Is it about the heat?
No, that hasn't been great though. What was that noise?
I have no idea.
Okay, never mind. It's about the side of the road they walk on.
Okay, great.
So what kind of country, in what kind of country do people drive on the left but walk on the right? Explain it to me. What is going through their heads?
The funny thing is I feel like whenever we've brought this up with an English person, they don't know that they do that.
I mean, and there you have the absurdity of it. They don't know they're doing something completely, deeply, deeply unserious.
It is bizarre.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so strange.
James has a lot of rules about sides of the road that you have, like just like a lot of etiquette rules out in society. I often get in trouble because I'm standing too in the middle of the escalator, etc., etc. So this is quite distressing.
Standing right in the middle of an escalator is a psychopath level thing to do.
Well, then you're married to a psychopath.
Or maybe. Maybe.
No one's in front or behind me. I'll stand in the middle of
the
escalator.
But you're not paying attention to the point where you don't know if anyone's behind you. So there could be someone behind you. You get lucky there's no one behind you.
I'm more aware than you think I am.
It's not true.
Okay, well, that ends that segment today.
I hope everyone enjoyed that. James rants about social activities and social mores segment.
You'd make a great podcast about that. For the neurodiverse.
Yeah.
It's a good podcast.
James pauses for a long time because it was a weird noise in the podcast. It also be cut together into some interesting segments for sure. Once again, why do any of you listen to this? It's absolutely ridiculous. Once again, I judge you.
Because we're cute.
Yeah.
All right, let's dive in.
You know what that noise is? It's the wind.
Yeah,
it's been wind for so long.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised if we get a good door slam at some point.
Okay, so hopefully some of you skipped to the first section. And are we having problems with the video?
No.
You sure?
Yeah.
What are you staring at then?
There's like a yellow dot on my face.
It might just be detecting that your face is a face. This is what you're missing out on, guys, if you don't watch the video on Spotify. Or maybe YouTube in the future.
Mm.
Just weird, Amy making weird facial expressions towards the camera because there's a yellow dot in her face. What is that? Is really weird, isn't it?
Can you see it?
Yeah, I can see it.
Okay. Favorite authors at the moment.
Yeah, so we have recently done a course. We've recorded a course about writing books, and it got us to think about what we like in authors, what we don't like in authors, what our favorite authors are at the moment. And we're doing this as at the moment, right?
It's like the moment, what we're interested in. It doesn't need to be a lifetime favorite author.
Yeah, it's not things you grew up with or favorite of all time. It's like, who are you really digging at the moment?
Yeah, exactly.
And we made a list, didn't we?
Yeah, we did on my phone.
Great. Are you happy to be keeper of the list?
I mean, I know that you're not happy that I'm keeper of the
list. No, of course. It's a horrible decision. How did I agree to let you be keeper of the list?
I don't know, James. Okay, where is it? Okay, cool.
So maybe a little bit of background. So Amy and I we both like to read.
We both love to read.
Would you say it's our main form of entertainment outside of like socials and YouTube? Like our main form of traditional entertainment?
Yeah, I would say so. For me it is. It's beyond TV shows, that's for sure. I'm not super into TV shows at the moment, which is weird.
Although I would counteract that and say it's beyond new TV shows. Like it's
I compulsively watch old TV to soothe me.
Yes, yeah. And I would say that maybe take up more time. But also especially, I mean, from audiobooks to reading a physical book to
e-books. It's a lot of time.
Yeah, we love it. We're into it. And I don't think we've ever really done we've done like our favorite things of certain years thing, but we never really talked about who we love and why.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with talking about fiction, and we're going to start off by talking about Pierce Brown. Because I have just finished his series, the Red Rising series, we decided it was called.
I think it's just called Red Rising.
Red Rising, yeah.
Which is weird because it's literally one of my favorite series of all time and I don't know the name of the series.
So I had read Red Rising, which is the first book, like many years ago. Really enjoyed it, but just didn't get pulled on to the next two books. It is sci-fi. I'm not a sci-fi girly pop. And although I was very compelled because the characters and the narrative was really strong, I just was like, I started Golden Sun, the next book, and it was completely in space. And I was like, oh, and I stopped.
So I think the reason this series, sometimes people bounce off it in one of two ways. One is they read the first book and they think, oh, is this like a YA Hunger Games, Harry Potter sort of hybrid thing?
Mm.
And if they like that, then they get to the second book and they go, oh, this is a full adult space opera.
Yeah.
And it's a real shift.
It is. It is a big shift from
and the you've first never book read adult book. Space opera before.
I haven't. Anyway, I decided to give it a go again. I read Red Rising for the second time. Loved it. It is really such a compelling story. And it is. It's got that kind of Hunger Games-esque
although I would narrative. Argue much more brutal, much more adult. I
yeah, mean, it's like...
I mean, Hunger Games is very brutal too, but I think in the style...
It's a bit more serious or
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
It's for older adults.
Yes.
And then I kept going and I read the second and the third book, which really is like space opera. And I listened to it. And yeah, there were definitely times where I tuned the fuck out. Like, I can't listen to a huge amount of like battle. Mm. But the characters and the narrative arcs and Pierce Brown's way of just continually to slam you with twist after twist with character, like, you know, revelation after narrative revelation is just so addictive. Like, he is an example of an author who just knows how to like compel you forward.
Yeah, the reason I love him, and I think he's a good writer, I really do think he's a great writer, but I think the part of writing that we often overlook is plot.
Mm.
Like, people think, how good's my prose? That people are obsessed with how good their prose is. And I love Pierce Brown's prose. I think I really like it. I like his style, but it's all in service to his electric plot.
Mm.
And I think so many authors like that, and I don't think he's a similar author to someone like Dan Brown, because I think that Pierce Brown is in many... Pierce, both named Brown, related? Definitely not.
Dan Brown as in...
Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code,
but
right.
It's that sort of thing where I think Pierce Brown actually is a better writer than Dan Brown, and that's why I prefer... Not that I want to judge quality of writing. So
why,
I think that's
you,
such a,
why are you comparing it to Dan not Brown? Better.
Because I think it's because the plot is so electric. Like, when you read the Da Vinci Code...
You're like, what?
Whoa! And you're just, like, pulled on from one thing to the next thing. And that is such a skill.
Yeah.
And I just really want to walk back my judgment call on Dan Brown's writing there. Because that's not something... I don't really believe in bad
writing. No, nor do
writing.
I.
Like, I think that writing is a package and plot is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
And some people write in service to a good plot. And people often accuse another great modern fantasy author... Bernard Sanderson of being a bad writer. Mm. There was that weird Wired article that came out recently, which was like, Bernard Sanderson is a bad writer despite selling millions and millions of copies of his book. And it was just like, what are you getting at here? This is so stupid. Like, how can you connect with people and be a bad writer? And like,
I completely object to any that kind of accusation.
The idea that the ordering of words in a sentence
it's so snobby.
Is better or worse than, I mean.
It's disgusting.
And often what people mean by good writing is wanky writing as
well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just such a subjective call.
Exactly. And then you go back to like the real, like the vitriol that, you know, 50 Shades of Grey, what was her name? E.L. James.
Mm.
And like Twilight, like these authors just get panned for being so terrible. I'm like, there was something electric about what they wrote.
Yeah.
So like, I'm sorry, like it just always comes across as elitist and snobby.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, I enjoy the old literary fiction from time to time.
Yeah,
and
for a different reason.
And there will be some
reason.
Things on the list in that kind of category, but it's very different. And I think something I love about Pierce Brown is that I personally find, I mean, at moments, he has a very sparse prose style sometimes, but sometimes his prose gives me shivers.
Mm.
And I think it's that ability to choose the right... I mean, he can be melodramatic at times, but in... At the perfect moment once he's really earned it from the plot. And it's like, whoa. And I have read the series up to the fifth book now. So there's a trilogy and then he's writing the second trilogy, which has now become a quadrilogy in the writing of it. But you can kind of just read the first trilogy if you want to, and you can go into the second, which Amy's deciding if she wants to do.
I've started.
Nice. But what was I saying?
I've no idea. Oh, electric. Like, sometimes it gives you shivers.
Yeah, and so I've read it three times now, everything all the way through, in preparation for the next book coming out next month. And I'm, like, years later, after having read the second book for the third time, coming back and, like, remembering wholesale that a line is coming up because it's a great line.
Wow,
and not really having any memory that I knew... not really having any knowledge I knew that line, but then the line comes and it hits, and I was listening to the audiobook, so it's like I can't see it coming on the page. It's
wow.
Like... And I know it's about to come. And
what line was it? Do you remember?
It's too... Like, saying it in isolation is cringe. So I'm not going to say it because... But I had tingles in like the 30 seconds coming up to it because I knew it was coming.
Wow.
And, you know, if I said, because I also, if I said the line, you'd be like, that's like a four sentence line.
Yeah.
And it kind of sounds.
Four
word line. And it kind of sounds cringe in isolation, but it just hits.
Yeah. I mean, that's the work of a, it's a, you know, a whole woven tapestry of, and it's all interconnected.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be like an astounding sentence for it to blow you away.
And I think that if you dump a lot of these lines that you get from fantasy and science fiction authors or crime authors, say, let's say genre commercial fiction, into a literary fiction thing, people would go, that's so cringe. But fuck, it works. Like, fuck, there's some good writers out there doing speculative fiction at the moment.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no time for anyone who is judgy and wanky about, you know, these genre fiction pieces. Yeah. Absolutely no time. It's a major red flag for me that there's a personality issue that I can't vibe with.
Yeah, yeah. It's like just disliking things that are popular because they're popular, yeah. I think is a
part of it. It feels immature. It feels like you haven't taken the time to understand like what it is you actually like.
Yeah, and I just, the idea that for something to be exciting is to be, for it to be low.
Yeah.
I think, and the idea that you might read a book for the plot rather than from the serious intellectual matter that it might have.
Childlike.
And a lot of these genre books deal with very serious questions and very serious intellectual matter.
Yeah, I mean, this one deals with huge, you know, like questions about power and revolution.
Yeah, I mean, the fascinating thing about the second trilogy is it asks the question, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone.
Yeah, you can't ask that question.
But it's like these books are about these warlords, essentially, a lot of science fiction and fantasy. And the idea is like, well, how do you live as that person?
Yeah.
What does it mean to be one of these people? What does it mean to your family? What does it mean for your friends? What does it mean for you having a peaceful life? I mean, these are the big questions you can't really ask in literary fiction that I think science fiction fantasy can really delve into. And they're big questions of politics and of economics and of what makes a good society and all these things, which really, I mean, speculative fiction is the thought experiment genre.
Yeah, it's the genre that allows us to play with politics a lot of the time.
It's like, and I mean, that's why we're interested in writing the novel that we're writing at the moment, because it's like a lot of what if questions. I think a lot of speculative fiction starts with a what if, or it starts with a side question you want to have answered for yourself, and you're like, I'll write it.
And I think so many of them, if not all of them, are beautiful examples of how fiction can change the world and how fiction can inform the reality we live in.
Yeah.
I see a lot of Pierce Brown's writing teaching and informing your writing. Like when I read your work, you're so plot driven. It's extremely readable, like text, so very, very easy to consume, but super plot driven. Like you just can't have a moment to breathe when you write.
Well, I mean, I think that's because it's what excites me when I read. And I remember I saw something on Reddit the other day being like, Pierce Brown is a bad writer because, you know, if you look at his first book, almost every sentence only has five words in it max. I'm like,
dude,
great.
Give it to me.
I mean, it's so easy to read. It's just so Moorish.
Yeah.
Like a risotto.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
One day we'd like to meet you, Pierce, if you're listening.
I doubt it.
Did you get shy?
No, I just was like,
Did you just get shy?
I'm a little bit shy.
Right, let's talk about Becky Chambers.
Yeah, so this is the flip side. I think there's a trend in modern genre fiction for things to be quite dark.
Mm.
And Pierce Brown's writing is certainly dark. And another person who I might talk about a bit later is Joe Abercrombie, very dark.
Mm.
His Twitter handle is Lord Grimdark, which is a joke from him. But because people used to use the word grimdark pejoratively.
Right.
So there's been a swing back again. And George R. R. Martin would be the father of the grimdark genre, probably.
Wow.
So if you watch Game of Thrones, it's essentially, well, Joe Abercrombie describes grimdark as like, doesn't describe grimdark like this, but Joe Abercrombie's like, I wanted to write a book where you find out, you know, what was happening when Frodo went and did a shit.
Yeah, yeah, he wants like, you know,
the gritty stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why doesn't everyone ever go to the bathroom in Lord of the Rings?
Amen. I think about it all the time.
Yeah, and you know, and also, like we were saying about Pierce Brown, it's, oh, how does Aragorn go home?
Yeah.
Afterwards and be a loving husband and father.
Yeah, after these he's just afterwards murdered. Stories.
I mean, mostly orcs, but still like hundreds of, you know, it's been creatures. Been in the heat of battle there.
Yeah.
I think that's what.
There's like, how do you find peace?
How do you find peace?
These epic stories.
Or like, how do you have a fully integrated personality as well? Whereas Becky Chambers is great because I think she and there's a movement called Hope Punk at the moment that has seen all these, the dark turn that speculative fiction is taking. And it's like, well, what if the future was good?
Yeah.
Or,
and just played with this idea that narrative doesn't have to be grim to be fascinating. So Becky Chambers also writes speculative fiction. She also plays in this kind of sci-fi realm. Again, not something I would be into, but Becky Chambers' books like just changed me. Like, I am so incredibly inspired by her as a writer, and I'm inspired as a human being at the worlds she's created in the future. They are so human, despite often being about alien life, and they are so hopeful, and I am obsessed.
Yeah, it's like almost cozy core as well.
It is cozy core. I mean, it reminds me of like a lo-fi beats, like, yeah, like playlist on YouTube.
Interesting, exciting character stuff happens, but rarely a very big battle, for example. No. Or is there ever a big battle? I don't think any of her books have a big battle. No, there's never a battle. It's almost always the climax would be a character moment.
Yeah, it's all about character, and it's all about characters in these future realms, you know, in space, on different planets, on different ships, and like, you know, we're dealing with different species, like and very different like cultures, and it's just fantastic. It is so bright. It is so electric.
And I think where a modern set literary fiction novel would be forced to do that character, and they're almost always character driven. Oops, I'm so sorry about that. Almost always character driven rather than plot driven.
Yeah.
And where someone like Becky Chambers differs is that because it's set in the far future, it's like you're not confined to anything, you know.
Yeah.
There's a race of lizards who are all polyamorous, for example, and like what are they like? What are they like interacting with humans? You know, there's a love between AIs and humans, and there's lots of interspecies romance. There's a lot of romance, obviously.
There's a lot of romance,
But in really interesting permutations, and you know, the other thing I find interesting is getting to explore. You know, we're so obsessed with ideology, our modern ideologies like capitalism. You know, it's so hard to imagine a future without capitalism.
Yeah.
What's the famous quote? It's like, it's easier to imagine the end of the world than it is the end of capitalism. Whereas I think these stories often give us a really amazing, like, what could be, and something interesting to strive for, and something interesting to, obviously it's impossible to say whether these worlds would work.
Yeah, but we get to play in them and see and be intrigued, and also just broaden our imagination.
Yeah, and it really gives you some perspective, I guess, on like, I think we are in a habit of just assuming that the worst impulses of capitalism will drive us into some kind of dystopia. Yeah, but
we're super prone to that. Mm. We live in a culture that's very nihilistic and very, the world's burning, it's all fucked. And like, obviously there's some really hard things that we're navigating at the moment. But these books, Becky Chambers, just invites us to look at like how much potential we have, and yeah.
And also Becky Chambers, we've talked about her in the podcast in the past, because her first book started off as a Kickstarter with just friends and family backing it, and ended up being extremely successful and getting picked up by a big publishing house. And now she's one of the great writers going around.
Truly, like, the reason why I am so enthusiastic about writing the book that me and James are writing together is because of Becky Chambers. And she kind of invited me into this world of sci-fi being so fucking enjoyable.
But you like space battles now?
I don't.
You do?
I really enjoy Pierce Brown's books. I don't like space battles.
So when does space battle happen?
I'm like in a meditative state.
But then how do you... And then when does space
battle... Because you know what the answer is after a space battle? Okay. Someone's either won or lost, and it's really easy to pick up on what. it's complete riffraff. There's information is completely useless to me.
But I think the cool thing about a great author like Pierce Brown in... when they do a battle is that they do character and storytelling through battle.
I pick up what's happened afterwards.
So good.
Every now and again my brain will like tune in, especially for character development. I feel like my brain's got like this like screening protocol.
Yeah.
If someone's having a character moment, my brain listens extra hard.
Have you ever had to write a battle? Did you have to write a battle in Esther in your first book? Yeah, I did.
Fucking hated it.
Did you hate it?
I hate how I have to write so many little sentences. I'm not keen to ever write a battle scene ever again.
That's fair enough. I mean, I don't see how you'll ever have to.
Good.
Although in your current novel in Jack, there's some scuffles, right?
Oh, scuffles, easy. In out.
You don't mind a scuffle.
A little punchy. I guess argy bargy.
A battle. How would you define battle? Like a battle happens over at least a chapter.
Oh my god.
And has to involve
more.
That's
so annoying.
Like a battle versus a fight scene. So
if I have to write something for more than a paragraph, and a paragraph is way too much. Like, no.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting because I quite enjoy writing a battle.
I'm really happy for you.
Hmm.
You know what I did enjoy, and it wasn't really a battle, it was like a long, elongated argy-bargy, was the beginning of Mercury's War, which is James's first book he wrote, and it was like this very long kind of chase scene, and you kept me really engaged throughout that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Didn't obviously keep the literary world of agents that engaged by it, so I'm glad someone liked it.
All right. Do you want to move on to Joe?
We have touched on Joe Abercrombie, but I think if you're a fantasy fan and you haven't read a Joe Abercrombie book, it's so different. He's doing something so different. Even though now it's like 15 years old, his first book, which is The Blade itself. It's from the first page of that book, you're like, oh my God, this is weird and wonderful and so different. And he's so voicey.
Mm.
You've only read one of his books, right?
I've read The Blade itself. So voicey. That's why I loved it.
Yes.
Because it was several POVs. Mm. Every single POV like sucked me in with the most unique perspective, unique voice, and also like bizarre lives.
Yeah. I mean, so Pierce Brown and Joe Abercrombie are two writers who I will immediately buy whatever book comes out from them, no matter what universe it's in. I just trust them so much. And it's so, I've never been let down by it ever once. Which is
amazing. An incredible relationship to have with an author.
And I think I get annoyed when people go like, oh, you know, when I was a kid, I really loved Harry Potter and I loved the anticipation of the next book coming out. And I just wish I could, you know, wish there were books out there that were that, you know, but I don't read anymore or something, or, you know, I don't read fantasy anymore. Or I'm like, this is the joy of fantasy. You get these huge relationships with these authors that go for many, many years. And the cool thing is, now, if you're not into that, then the cool thing about Joe Abercrombie and Pierce Brown is that they have to complete trilogies. You're not going to have to wait for everything.
Yeah, you have to wait,
But, you know, my love of Brandon Sanderson, part of it is that I'm waiting like 3 years for the next book. And it's like, oh my God, when's it going to come out?
Yeah, it's so exciting.
And like, it's like that anticipation again. You have that link back to your childhood where my grandma used to pre-order me two copies. Me and my sister, a copy each of Harry Potter. And we used to, you know, go wait in line. And then it'd be a Saturday morning and we'd read all day. And then, oh man, it was just like, it was so great. Like, I get that as an adult now.
Well, I used to have a chapter a day rule for Harry Potter, and me and my dad would have meetings in the evening about the chapter we read, and I would obey it because I was so terrified of finishing.
Yeah,
I just was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened in my life. Like, I'm going to do a chapter a day, and I'd sit there and then I would like reread it and then I would discuss it. Oh, I can feel it. It's just such a good feeling.
And that, but if once you get enough sci-fi and fantasy authors under your belt, so I'm going to burp.
Wow, that still got picked up.
Yeah, well done, everyone. Lovely. Glad you enjoyed that. I tried to anchor my face away, but didn't work.
Not enough.
Not going to edit it out.
Not enough.
If you get enough sci-fi and fantasy authors under your belt, you get like one of those every couple of months.
Yeah.
Or every 6 months or something. And it's like, sorry, another pet hate is related to the Harry Potter thing, is when people read The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss, they're like, I'm not a fantasy reader, but my friend gave me this book, The Name of the Wind. And it's like the book that you should read if you don't like fantasy. And I loved it. It was so good. But when's he going to release the third one? I'm like, excuse me, great book, but there are so many other great books out there.
I disagree with you. I mean, there are loads of great books out there, but nothing peeves me off more than Rothfuss's inability to write that third book.
Yeah, but...
You want me to be nice to him.
I want you to be nice to him. I feel bad for him.
Of course.
He's obviously struggling. He's obviously struggling.
Okay, I'm sorry. He's very good.
He's allowed to be slow in his book.
You're right, James. I'm being extremely hypocritical.
I know that you think you could just like...
I just want to get in there. What are you doing?
500 crappy words a day, Patrick.
What are you fucking doing? Sit down. Write 500 words.
But obviously there are underlying mental health issues that are stopping you from doing that, which we have to respect.
We do. And we do respect that.
And we do respect it. But yes, okay, sure. Rothfuss, so your argument is just...
It's valid.
But I don't understand what your argument was.
Whatever, we have to move on because we are under time.
Okay, but all I'm saying is that like it annoys me then, and I go, oh, well, have you tried any other fantasy books?
And they're like,
nah. I'm like, well, it's your own fault. Stop worrying about what Patrick Rothfuss is doing. Start worrying about what you're doing and go read another fantasy book.
I mean, that's valid.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's talk a bit. I think we're only going to get to fiction today.
Yeah, we like a lot of books, don't we?
We do.
We'll do nonfiction soon.
Yeah, let's talk about Richard Osmond, who wrote his debut series.
Thursday Murder Club.
The Thursday Murder Club. Oh, fuck me,
that was such a good series.
I haven't enjoyed a book so much in so long.
Once again, very voicey.
And that's something that always is for me. If there's a voicey book, I'm there.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to...
What do we mean by that?
Okay, so if you don't know what voicey means, it's like the prose is very distinctive. Like it's, how would you describe it? It's like,
it's honestly
like
a
character.
Term.
It's like the character comes out so strongly in the prose. It's not like the author, often a third person book, you know, you're in the head of the character, but you're also kind of in the head of the author. Like,
yeah.
Whereas I feel, say a voicey book is like you are transported into someone else.
Yeah.
And the reason Richard Osman does this so amazingly well is because he has so many characters and every single one of them is so distinct and so full.
And just divine to spend time with.
Like, you almost don't even care about the plot.
Oh my God, no.
Obviously, it's a crime book, so the plot is important, but I think this is...
And it is a fabulous plot. But the voices and the characters are just... You just fall in love so quickly.
Yeah.
And he's just... He honestly...
And delightful.
It's that's what it is. It is the most delightful book. You don't have to love crime to love this book. Like,
I don't really read that much crime.
It's delightful. It is about, I think, four elderly people who are in an old person's home. And they solve crimes on Thursdays.
Well, they have a club on Thursdays where they go over old case files. Yeah. But they're constantly solving crimes.
Anyway, the fourth one's coming out in September, I think.
I'm so excited.
Very exciting. Might try and pop into London for that.
That'd be nice. This is something about being in the UK that's good, is that people actually do book tours here.
Yeah.
Obviously, sometimes people do go to Australia, but it's like a huge effort. And honestly, respect to them because it's a fucking long way away. Bothered? Side note, can I have another James's second rant of the day?
Mm.
If you are American or English or European and you complain about your little 7-hour flight across the Atlantic, go fuck yourself. Unless you have a disability that in some way makes travel extremely unpleasant for you. If you're not disabled, if you are of able body and you don't and mind and you don't have a panic disorder that makes flying particularly... So enough caveats. But if you're not a disabled person, who then fuck you.
I agree. The other day I had an American call a 4-hour flight, a really long flight, and I was like,
The video was like, what I do to prepare for my 4-hour flight? I'm like, you don't.
You don't prepare for it. 4-hour
flight is a blink of the eye. It is a it's like a pleasant little sit down and read my book for a few hours. Like, there's a 4-hour flight. I'm so sorry.
If you're not Kiwi or an Australian, I don't want to hear from you.
If you've never sat on a 15-hour flight and then backed it up 1 hour later straight into an 8-hour flight,
Shut the fuck up.
You have nothing to say to
me. Or the worst one, the 15-hour flight, then the 24-hour layover, then the 7-hour flight.
Oh my God, yeah.
It's one of the worst experiences. It's one of the most just like non-traumatic traumas. You know, it's like...
But the advantage is to the point where if I had to go to New York tomorrow, if someone was like, you have to go on a 7-hour flight to New York tomorrow, I'd be like, easy peasy.
I'm like, going to America from here?
Easy peasy.
It's like going to Perth.
Or like a single 12-hour flight, whatever.
Oh my God, it's like a breeze. Like
going from here to LA, I'd be like, no worries.
Literally no worries.
Sure. Do you want me to stand the whole time? I'll do it.
I'll stand.
I don't care.
Just give me a standing seat.
Literally nothing. Don't give me any of that crap food. I'll just...
Oh no, won't
just
eat.
Water, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Good rant. Really appreciate that one.
What were we talking about?
Let's quickly talk about Sally Rooney and maybe even... Rally Sooney and maybe even Gabrielle Zevin.
Yep.
Before we wrap this up.
Sure.
So Sally Rooney is much more on the literary side of fiction, obviously very well known. She writes books.
Yeah, literary fiction, I think you would call it.
I was trying to describe them. She writes books often set in her home in Ireland, and they're always very, very character-driven, small stories, and they're very, very beautiful, and I really enjoyed them, and I'm not a huge literary fiction fan. Mm. Sally Rooney did something to capture the heart of a lot of readers, and I'm not entirely sure what it is, but she's a very good writer.
Yeah. Do you know what I've just thought about is that I'm a fucking sucker for someone who doesn't use speech tags for their speech.
You love it?
Yeah, because I was also thinking about Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo.
Yeah,
which I absolutely love. And it's like, I don't know, just don't put speech marks in, don't put full stops in. I mean, so Girl, Woman, Other is a bit more literary maybe than Sally Rooney, which is maybe a little bit more commercial.
Yeah.
But once again, like, I don't know, I'm a sucker for it. It's like, you can hack my brain.
It's very flowy without having any speech tags. Yes. Very, your brain just like runs over it so easily.
Sorry, it's speech marks. A speech tag is like, she said, I think.
Oh,
right?
I see.
I think I'm using the terminology right there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Amy wouldn't know. She still doesn't know how to tag speech properly.
And I refuse to learn.
Every time, I've probably talked about this
before. This is your third rant.
Third rant. But this is specifically about you.
All right.
I love you. I think you're a brilliant writer.
Seems like you've been kind of mean to me
because
today.
I think it's mean to me because... Every time you've written a book, I've had to go through basically and be like, change that full stop to a comma, change that full stop to a comma.
I've never asked you to do that.
I know.
I've never asked you to do that. I have an editor that does that. I've never asked you to do that.
Okay, well, yeah.
You just don't like it.
Sure. Every time you give me a piece of writing to read, I'm like, I can't concentrate on this until I fix the speech tag.
That's a you problem. And then in the same vein, like Gabrielle Zevin, she came out with her book Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Mm. That's all I've read of hers. But again, captivated by...
Oh my gosh, I love that book.
I've just never read anything like it.
Mm. That was like on the, I would say also on the commercial side.
Of yeah, more commercial was, side, yeah.
Just commercial modern fiction. So yeah. Readable. Well, it was actually kind of historical fiction because it did start in, I guess, the
90s or something.
I mean, 80s? When does historical start? I don't really even know. No it's idea. It's not, is it period? Is it, what is it? It's a little bit pre-modern.
I think I liked it because of the topic, which was creating games. And it was really about like creativity and collaboration. And I was very interested in like just watching these creatives have it was a success story, a very like... traditional success story, and like how do creatives navigate that, and they didn't navigate it super well really, and it was just very interesting. It was a bit bleak for me at the end, but it was also very interesting.
It was bleak, but like she didn't end on bleak. She ended on hopeful, I think, which was nice. Amy doesn't care about spoilers, by the way, so if you never be around her if you don't want something to be spoiled.
It's not that I go around spoiling everything, it's that I don't care about spoilers. You can tell me the end of anything. I just don't care. In fact, like, suspense does nothing for me.
Reading these Pierce Brown books, I think maybe it helped you that you've been like, James, does this person die?
Yeah, I'll just ask. Sorry. And
I'll be like, yes, no, yes.
Or
no.
I'll be like, can you tell me what happens in this part? And then I'll read it with even more delight than if I had not known. I think it's something to do with an anxiety disorder.
I think it might be. Mm-hmm. But also just shows, you know, you can still enjoy a story, I think, without spoilers. Oh. I'm getting annoyed at the moment. Fourth rant. I'm actually an unpleasant person to be around because I love a rant. I love a rant. Me and my friends are all playing the new Legend of Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom at the moment. And people in our group chat are very concerned about not getting spoiled about things. And I've got no time for it.
People should.
Because I don't think a game, I don't really see a game as something that can be spoiled.
I guess, like, are you purposefully spoiling it for them?
No, but it's like someone will say, oh, how do I find that this armor set? And then someone will be like, don't say, because I don't want to be spoiled. And
yeah,
like,
that seems precious.
I mean, to find an armor set in a game, don't get me wrong, I believe that games are absolute high form of art.
Yeah, and beautiful stories.
But I don't really feel like they can be spoiled because so much of it is in the playing of the game for me.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. I was going to really quickly bring up Colleen Hoover. I read a lot of Colleen. This has to be our final thing.
Okay, can I just give a little... aside about, of course, a story driven game like The Last of Us is a different story. Go on.
I don't even know how that's relevant
to what I was saying before.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you can spoil The Last of Us.
Yeah, that's
incredible story driven game.
Zelda? I don't think so.
Interesting, yeah. I just want to quickly touch on Colleen Hoover, and it kind of comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning with that kind of snobbishness of people not liking something that is very beloved. Like, Colleen Hoover's books are fucking, like, you can hoover
them up. Mm? Maybe that's why she became a writer.
I have loved some of her books, and I've bounced off a few, and I think she's interesting as an author. I think.
Maligned online as being a bad writer, right?
Oh, absolutely. Detested on TikTok.
Same as what's the other?
But simultaneously supported by TikTok.
And who's the other one?
Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Yes, also maligned as well.
Yeah, and also beloved. Yeah. It's this bizarre, I don't know. I think Verity by Colleen Hoover was a fucking masterpiece. I tried to read It Ends With Us.
Mm.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't trust her as an author in terms of, like, I know I'm going to love her work, but I liked it. It's so easy to read. It doesn't take any, like, skin off my teeth. Like, I'm like, I'll give it a fucking whack because I'll be able to read it so fast.
Yeah.
And what a talent to have, like, to have writing that is so readable that it's just, like, there's no friction.
Yeah.
So cool.
Amazing. Amazing.
Cool. We have to go because we've got an Inspired Collective session.
Okay, can I just give a 30-second plug? I just want to plug two authors who I think are defining the genre at the moment in fantasy.
Yeah.
And that's N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth trilogy. It's a bit old now, but I think if you're writing fantasy and you haven't read the Broken Earth trilogy, you should definitely go and read it.
Yeah.
And
R.F. Kuang.
Rebecca Kuang. Yeah. So the three authors. So this is often, fantasy has done an amazing turn lately in that a lot of writers of color are coming in and they're bringing in really fresh, fucking amazing perspectives. Books. So Rebecca Kuang, R.F. Kuang, who does the... I don't know what the series is called, but the first
Babel.
Oh, but I was thinking about the her first trilogy,
The Poppy War.
Yeah, The Poppy War trilogy. Mm-hmm. The Poppy War trilogy, of course, really great fantasy. And then Fonda Lee, who does the Jade City and the Greenbone Saga, also all really, really great trilogies, and I think really exciting.
It is exciting. You know, we're all still reading so much. Like, this is just an industry that really excites me. Like, we're reading stories, and it's so beautiful that we get to talk about this and share these authors and also write our own books.
Yeah, it's incredible.
If you're writing a novel, know how much it's needed and know how important your work is. And yeah, I'm excited for us as this generation of storytellers.
Amazing.
Okay, thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.